That's really dark. Ian. That was really fucking dark, man.
It's the Borg. What do you expect? Captain's Pod, Stardate 16, 81, 64.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of Cinema Sins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she insists the ship never had a kindergarten in the first place. It's unprecedented today.
It definitely had a kindergarten.
You're the one that ejected it in the simulation.
To be fair, I was told that there were no rules.
I thought you, because I was told there would be no children. Yes, but there were teachers. Oh, yeah. Boy.
Yeah.
Well, this week we continue into Lower Decks Season 1 with Episode 3, Temporal Edict. Based on that very vague title, Danae, what do you think is going to happen this week?
No.
Temporal means time. Edict means something else.
Edict is an official order or proclamation issued by a person in authority.
That was my next guess.
Yeah. Is this a timey-wimey episode?
If that's your prediction.
Okay, I'm going to go with a timey-wimey episode.
Timey-wimey episode. What kind of time travel?
Which are some of your favorites?
They actually are, completely. Time loop or time travel?
Oh, we're going to go loop. I think because it's season one, they're going to go with some of the hits. They're going to go for the first three episodes hitting some pretty big notes. And so, yeah, we're going to see a loop.
Good logic. Love it. Well, it's time to rejoin our Lower Deckers. We will see you in 10 Forward for a full debrief. Do to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what is your thing of choice from the replicator?
I'm joining them for a margarita, obviously.
Yeah, I want crystals. Crystals and margaritas all around.
What are the crystals for?
The aliens love crystals. They're obsessed with them. The episode?
You want a crystal to carry around so that the aliens love you, but then you also want a margarita.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to be that guy constantly shouting crystal throughout the episode. Crystal?
So, salt or crystal? So I was thinking that you were going to like crystallize those and then line your margarita glass those crystals.
Aren't salts crystalline rather than crystals themselves? They're crystalline in nature.
Shut the fuck up with your science knowledge.
Give us a synopsis, Ambassador.
Oh, in today's episode, there's no time travel at all. Fuck!
No, none at all. And I knew it going in.
Yeah.
What kind of time travel is it, Danae? Is it a loop? Is it just straight up time travel?
I was
going to keep going. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I was a little bit disappointed. I'm not going to lie. But it was still a fun episode.
I remember.
This was, if you've ever worked for like corporate America, this might be a triggering episode for you.
Uh-huh. 100%.
When the captain just goes a little bit too crazy and decides that in order to prove that the Cerrito Burrito is a crew that is valuable and shouldn't be fucked with, she overworks everybody so much that the entire ship basically falls apart and a granola group of aliens lands on their ship. And
just because they like crystals,
whacks them with crystals.
Yeah. Doesn't mean they like granola too. They may hate granola.
They might.
Too barky.
So that's what happens in this episode. And you know what? Who saves the day? Boimler.
I've got issues with that.
Forever in history, he'll be known as the most lazy ensign that there ever was.
Mm-hmm. As his legacy would want.
And also the show tells us that maybe Handsome Ransom and Mariner are gonna fuck.
Gonna get on.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think they're actually a pretty interesting match, to be honest. So overall thoughts and feelings. Did you enjoy this episode, Ambassador?
Yes, although I didn't smile as much. It finally got me. That's one thing about this episode, or this show rather, is each individual episode seems to throw so many different things at you that at some point something is going to hit.
Yes.
And when it does hit, it always feels nice. So yeah, I wasn't upset with it.
What hit you?
It was when Mariner was trying not to enjoy Handsome Ransom doing his fighting thing. Like, that eventually got me. That was the second one. The first, she's like, I'm not into this. I'm not into this. And she's like, just kind of glancing out to watch him fight. And he's just glistening, you know? He was... Mm-hmm. He went from just a normal kind of animation to where he had like the sweat going on, and
he was
doing the Kirk hit, which I had no reference for until we watched some of TOS. So that was
the
really
double
fun.
Fist punch. I love. He's just like, interlock fingers. I respect your sovereignty. Because it's such a great little Kirk reference, because Kirk will go off on a speech about you have the right to choose. But then we'll also just punch anybody or double flying kick anybody that doesn't agree with him. It's amazing how much Ransom is this merger of Riker and Kirk in every way that you can imagine.
And I think Mariner actually calls it out, like, what are we in the 20-something hundreds? And are you Kirk? So there's a on-the-nose reference for those of us who know the name Kirk at the very least. Mm. So you're like, oh, I know that reference. But then there's also this double... like clenched fists together, punch mm-hmm. action happening that if you've seen the episodes, you know what it's referencing. So that was kind absolutely. Of a, that worked for me. But like the tone shifted a little bit. I think the idea of overworking your crew and not giving them a buffer, it tweaked me. I think it's meant absolutely. To tweak you, but that tweaked
it's
me.
It's a genuinely like heartfelt episode. Like this one is really hitting on a genuine like moral at the heart of it as well. It kicks off obviously hitting the Scotty cliche of this famous thing that whenever Kirk would ask Scotty for like a repair time, he'd be like, it's gonna take 17 hours to fix the warp core. 2 hours later, Kirk is just like, I need the warp core now, and Scotty's like, done it, fixed it. Mm-hmm. And it's only in the third Star Trek movie where Kirk says, how long will it take to fix the ship? And Scotty says 4 weeks, but I know you haven't got 4 weeks, so I'll get it done in 2. And Kirk is like, have you been doing this the whole time? Have you been multiplying everything by a factor of 4? And Scotty says, yeah, that's why I'm a miracle worker. So this is like taking one of the most classic core principles of Star Trek. Like Geordi does it throughout TNG. He's a little bit more cagey about it, but... yeah, this is taking that and actually how the lower decks have built that into how they work. So everybody does it and it's just normal until it's found out. So for me, I remember this episode taking on that cliche and doing something really fun with it. Because it's at the heart of Star Trek.
Yeah, that is the deep fun of this, is it explains why everything can be done a little bit faster all of the
sudden.
Buffer
time, baby.
But really it clever. Also is such a nice reminder, too, that building in a buffer is a really important part of everybody's work life.
Crucial.
It is crucial. It. And the idea that the everything kind of writes itself. It's almost like the crew gets so wound up from being overworked that murdering people. I don't know that they actually murdered anybody. They think they just detained them by pummeling them with their pads. But
it's quite cathartic.
Yeah, it was a very cathartic. This was like watching Office Space, but with invaders. You know, isn't that right? Wasn't that the movie Office Space where they take the printer out and beat the shit out of it?
Yeah, that's the one. I'm pretty sure it is.
And the resolution is that the captain reinstates their freedom to kind of figure out what their work day looks like. Because nothing was wrong. It's the captain had the incorrect idea that in order to prove themselves, they needed to become even more efficient, even though things were working perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's one that hit me when I watched it as well, because this is like built into retail. Like the amount of times that I was asked as a store manager to plot out everybody's tasks that were throughout the store. Like what would it take to manage this store if you broke it down into tasks and then allotted time to it? And then work that into person hours and then tell me how many hours that you need. And all of that was for them to say, you've told me how many man hours you need to manage this shop, and that's what I'm going to give you. But you can't nail it down to that, like, to the second. And obviously, like any good satire, this episode takes it to the extreme and says you have 60 seconds to do this, and then you move on to the next thing. And it just, you can't have that. Like, that buffer time is a genuine thing. You need that to just mentally prepare for the next job. You cannot work at 100% efficiency the entire time. It's just not possible. So this natural thing that has evolved is actually crucial to making the workforce function properly. It's a great thing to cover in like 15 minutes.
Yeah. And it spent enough time on it, but not too much time on it, because this show does a nice A-B plot pretty efficiently. And it's kind of like shuffling a deck of cards together. It bounces back and forth between things fast enough that you don't really get a chance to feel like the weight of a story. This one, I mean, things were going to shit pretty fast whenever they had to. It was like, what, 3 weeks later, and everyone's just basically...
It was just 1 week later.
Insane. Yeah, it was pretty wild. The other thing that I liked about this plot from the captain is that we get to see the similarities of Mariner and the captain as well. Like,
yeah,
she's a little batshit, and you can kind of see how Mariner might get some of her inspiration for her tenacity.
Mm-hmm. Quite aggressive.
Her aggressiveness from her very dominating mom, which is fun to watch, because I think in this season, we don't know that they're related until later. Like, we're still not really sure as observers that they're related.
So we do find out at the end of episode one, but the crew isn't aware until episode 10, the season finale. Okay. So it's a little bit under wraps. But yeah, I can't remember what the scene is, but I did remember her mentioning it in episode one. Oh, I know. It's because Freeman talks to her ex-husband or husband. I keep thinking they're divorced. They may not be. But Mariner's dad is an admiral, and they're talking, and Freeman is like, this isn't going to work. Get Mariner off my ship. And he's just like, she's your daughter. You've got to deal with her. You're breaking up. So yeah, we know, but the crew doesn't.
Okay. That's interesting. So I guess this is then us being able to kind of see how they interact or don't interact, but then they have this, like, you know, similarities that are fun to look at. And the captain unsettles me in this episode, and probably should.
Agreed.
that's what it's designed to do. People talk about Janeway being wacky captain. I think she's up there. What is the captain's name? Freeman?
Captain Freeman. Yeah, Captain Freeman. So this, I'm hand on heart, I'm not a big fan of Freeman. And this episode sums it up really well. Because this kind of ties into one of the inherent flaws with Lower Decks as a show as well, because the Lower Deckers, in theory, should be on a path of like learning and like kind of a journey of like self-improvement, and they are, but I kind of want to see them get that from the senior crew. But more often than not, Boimler, Mariner are teaching Freeman and Ransom lessons about how to properly command. And Captain Freeman completely falls apart in this episode. She loses her shit with the entire crew and tells them that they're all useless and that's why they're not getting the good assignments, gets rid of buffer time, and then works herself to the bone and does all of the jobs herself. Boimler has to come in and say, no, your job is to delegate and to manage and to trust us to be a crew. And I'm like, why is Ensign Boimler giving you that update, Captain?
So, because he's the only one to survive, because he's thriving in this high task environment.
Yeah.
That's
and
why.
There's just some of that that's like a little bit frustrating for me. Like, I want the senior crew to be the mentors, because at this point, even though you're calling them Lower Decks, they are the A team, because they're the ones with the answers. They're the ones that end up solving the problem.
I think the part for me about Freeman and whether or not I'm enjoying her, it's like if I'm just watching a cartoon that doesn't really do anything, I don't really care. But this is meant to be an actual like canon thing. It's like this is still rooted in Star Trek reality.
No, it is. Like, if you forget this is a cartoon and make it all live action, it's really hard to suspend, like, wow, this crew is out there. They exist.
Yeah.
You really have to suspend that a little bit.
But there are, how many ships are out there? Like, just an estimate.
I'm going to say 500.
Okay. So yeah, there's going to be a captain like Freeman out there. This is just an example of one that's a little bit like just tight and has a bad day and decides,
I think,
you know what?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
We're not getting the recognition that we deserve. We should be able to do these things. We're not a joke. So let's like shore things up a bit. Let's look at our numbers. But because it's a cartoon, it's amplified, and she's just like this kind of crazy person, you know, that we see running around. But it's still giving what it needs to give, which is that if you overwork everybody on your team, when shit goes sideways, everyone's going to be exhausted and potentially not able to jump in and handle the problem. So, but it's still kind of hard for me to be like, oh yeah, Freeman's great, because she does some really insane things. For example, when the when they're being boarded by people with spears that are stabbing them, and granted, there's a really funny line that Mariner has with like, you're stabbed with a spear, we're on a spaceship, you're fine, like this is not a big deal.
No one's dying from a spear wound.
Exactly. So there's this sort of like, you know what, you might get wounded, but you're going to be fixed. Really, it's just pain management that you need to really be thinking about. But she instructs her crew, hey, we're being boarded and we're being attacked, but you cannot stop multitasking. That's the part that takes it from like a real captain for me into this cuckoo bananas la la land.
Yeah.
And yet,
you are being invaded.
Right.
Stop the invasion. Like that.
Right.
That I literally have that note. That's where the reality breaks for me, because she's taking this thing way beyond the extreme. And it's like, you must do all of these things and defend the ship. And it's like, come on.
Yeah. In reality, if this is firmly like planted into Star Trek world, and this is a real, we're just looking in on a little dimensional moment here, and the filter is a cartoon. If we take that and we make it a live action in our mind, suddenly it's like, well, this person should be court-martialed, you know, because they're 100%. Putting everyone at risk because they want to pad a number that they themselves decided needed to be fixed. It wasn't like Starfleet sent down some sort of mandate, like, hey, we really need your numbers to look better so that you can be recognized. This is all in her head. And that was the hardest part of this episode for me, not just watching corporate America or corporate wherever, because I, you know, corporate for you is not in America. Watching the corporate mentality of crunching numbers and people don't matter, your timesheet matters, like, or your output matters. Watching that creep into Star Trek is like, oh, you know, that sucks.
It's gross.
But you know what? They do real life stories all the time, so it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. Like, this is normal. It's the part of Freeman that is so extreme that I don't think that she should be captain. That's what I'm wrestling with more in my head.
Yeah. It's when it kicks off for me when, in front of her entire crew, she's like, nobody takes us seriously because this crew is a joke. And I'm like, you in the middle of the bridge, way to demotivate your entire bridge crew and how quickly downstream that's going to be. That's where it's like, I respect her less of a captain because of how like harsh she was to her crew. And yeah, it's an interesting one. It's where we're only in episode 3, we haven't fleshed out all the characters yet, but it's where the theme takes priority over the characters, which I think happens a lot in like early seasons before you've established who all of these people are. But
and I just think that there is a reality, if this was a reality moment and they had to do like a report about what happened, like Captain Freeman would need to be talking to the ship counselor about her stress level or her.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and even the rest of the crew who leads this ship, why did they not intervene at some point and say, hey, this is going too far? Like there should be other people around the captain that would stop them from running the ship into the ground. Well, the proverbial ground. Because they're in space.
We know Ransom is being all topless and stuff on the planet, so he literally can't help her. I do love the B plot to this. I love the classic aliens have kidnapped people, trial by combat instead of an actual, and then all of the issues with that. It's like, why can't we have an actual trial? Like, make a speed course, make a race for them to take part in, and all like the ridiculous things the original series in particular, all of the hoops they would have to jump through when an away team is inevitably captured. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. They have a fun dialogue. They have unexpected kind of moments. The big brute is actually intelligent. And then, of course, the big reveal, the big moment, not really a reveal, the big moment is Handsome stabbing her in the foot.
That was unexpected. So great. Genuinely unexpected. Like, it caught me off guard. I thought we were going to go there. Mariner gives a big speech. Ransom steps down. But my respect for Ransom went through the roof when he stabs her in the foot And he's just like, this is my team, my responsibility. I'll go out there and fight. And it's just, it's so great because it doesn't undermine what Mariner said. They don't have to argue in a loop for ages. It's such an efficient way to move the story along.
And then we also don't know, does he not have any scars because he had them removed in sickbay? Or because 100%. He's just so good at battle that he's never been scarred before?
I mean, yes, yes, and yes. I think it's not just that he plays it safe. It's that he's actually pretty good as well. Like, he's actually pretty tactical. If anything, he is probably a bit too by the book in terms of the Riker book.
How do you feel, though, about Boimler saving the day, but then also having a statue erected for him far, far in the future? How do you feel about that?
It's kind of a perfect bit of irony that the thing he goes down in history for is buffer time, when he's the one that's a stickler for the rules. That's really, really fun. I like I said before, I have an issue with Boimler having all of the answers and giving them to Freeman. Feels a bit odd, but these are the main characters that we're talking about, so they're going to end up saving the day. But my favorite bit of that scene is the statue of Chief O'Brien.
It's so
because
good.
We know this is going to be, we know this series after episode 1 and 2, we're kind of waiting for the next references. And when that teacher says, and now for one of the most important figures in all of Starfleet history, we're all just like, oh, they're going to cut to the credits. They're not going to show us.
Yeah.
But then they just bring up Chief O'Brien and we're like, yes, he is. But like, we don't get all of the reasons. But it's so rewarding that it's Chief O'Brien.
It's so
the perfect
good.
Pick.
Yeah.
It's so great.
And it's unexpected. Like, I think I could have seen it being like, I don't know, Data or
yeah,
Picard or
Wesley
so
Crusher.
I think Wesley Crusher would have been a surprise, but like something about O'Brien.
It's
I don't
so
know
great.
Why. It seems like he's just overlooked.
He is. And the statue of him, is that his transporter console as well? Like, that's his pinnacle moment, is his transporter chief.
Uh-huh.
Not as the head of operations on Deep Space Nine or whatever, or engineering, but it says he's the transporter guy.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It was pretty great. And I loved all, like, the little kids that were... There was, like, a little Borg that was there, I think.
Yes.
So what an interesting glimpse into the future. Which has our children usually Borgified?
Yeah, babies get Borgified. So they don't tend to be born. But when a ship is assimilated, any kids or babies that are on there are assimilated and put into maturation chambers until they become grown-ups.
Okay. Oh, I think I remember that. I think I'm having this memory of sort of a little drawer that pulled out and there was just like a person inside. Is that really part of it?
That's a real memory.
Holy shit, it's in there somewhere.
However, that's from an episode we haven't watched yet. So that's a memory going way, way back.
That's probably me watching it OG and being...
Yeah, 100%.
Like pained somehow.
Yeah, that's from the best of both worlds.
I was like, the horror of that anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
So then that means that they liberated the little Borg drawer.
Teen Borgs.
They just like, they went into the Borg ship and then they liberated the little Borg drawer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God they check the drawers when they go do that.
Right? I wouldn't think to check the drawers.
Would they have scanned for life signs? Because are Borgs still living?
Yeah, they're still living. You get life signs.
So you would scan and you would see there's this many Borg inside this ship and then you're going through and you're like...
Yeah, I think initially there's some confusion because they're just one hive mind, but they do give off a biological signature.
Individual signature somehow.
Yeah.
Or maybe
eventually
even like
they get there.
Like a mechanical signature of some kind, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they get all of the obvious ones off and then they go in for the second scan. Like, you know what, guys? There's still millions of them in drawers. We just didn't know till today. It's like a sock drawer, but for Borg.
There's always an odd number of Borg babies because you always lose one of them.
What?
Like socks. That was a sock.
That's,
I was losing.
That's really dark, Ian. That was really fucking dark, man.
It's the Borg. What do you expect?
Sorry.
I do love that we get a very brief, like, blink your ears and you'll miss it, of Boimler humming in the turbo lift. And he's humming the TNG theme.
Okay, how does this work? How are we breaking the
world
here?
I don't know! You should know about the non-diegetic music. Diegetic? Diegetic?
Diegetic. I was like, wait a second, is that like, is that something where, how does that work?
Just let it go. That's the, it shouldn't work. And the only way to accept it is that it is a bit of classical music that they all know about that isn't actually anything to do with the TV show. But yeah, he should not be humming the theme to TNG, given how much of a fan of the Enterprise he is. But it's amazing.
Yeah, I did write that down.
I kind of love it. I kind of love it. There's a couple of other fun references as well. Rutherford says, Tendi can't remember where sickbay is. And Rutherford is like, I think it's on deck 26. And Tendi's like, do we even have that many decks? That's like just a running nod to, they will always establish how many decks, almost always establish how many decks are on a ship. And then invariably over the next 7 years of episodes, it'll be damage control team to deck 29. As I, but in episode one, you only had 22 decks. Where are you going? Like, they can never keep the amount of decks consistent.
Ah, that's a fun little thing I wouldn't know about. We also got to hear a curse word in today's episode because she called bullshit on protocol and they bleeped it.
Oh, yeah, she said bullshit. That's amazing.
But they bleep it.
It's weird that they bleep it in this, but not in Discovery.
This is for kids. Maybe more kids are going to watch this.
It's really not. I don't know. Maybe. It might just be funny because, like, sensor bleeps can be funny.
Okay, I guess that's true. I'll have to listen out for it, though, because I feel like this is the kind of show where they're going to let their fuck flag fly.
No, they don't. They definitely bleep them all.
We should talk, too, about, because the show is kind of in two parts. There's the one-off opening credit bit, like, before the show kicks off, and then there's the actual episode. Yeah, and today we learned that Boimler plays the electric violin.
Yes, the glass
violin.
That's
what we learned. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
we need to know about that.
He did like this dance number and I think he called it Essence. Like, this is
Essence,
so,
and it was inspired by my mom.
I want to know Boimler. He just seems like a really cool guy. And then he's like, and here's my next one. Requiem for a Hug.
No, so sad.
Boimler is the kind of person that you want to like keep close to you so you can keep him protected. Like, let's just reinforce your bubble and make sure that, you know, life is going to come at you, man.
Yeah, let's guide you through some therapy. You would really benefit from it. I don't think we've met Boimler's mum.
Oh, man. If you make a character like Boimler and then you have to backpedal and go, now what influenced Boimler to get to this point?
What created Boimler?
Yeah, that'd be kind of a trip, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else before we do some pippage?
I'm ready to pip.
Pip it. How many pips out of four, Ambassador?
I'm going two.
I'm going to give it three. Why are you thinking two? What knocked it down so low for you?
I don't know. I got bored.
That's fair. That's why I'm dropping a pip, because during the like the buffer time stuff when they're all tired, my eyes were wandering a little bit. So yeah, I think that's fair. I love the theme though. I love the there's a rock hard theme behind it, which I really enjoyed. There's less humor beats than last week, but the sudden foot stabbing is just an all-time for me. I love it.
It's great. It does some really, really good things, but it lost my attention just enough that I find myself tuning out quite a bit more. Yeah. I think, again, because I found it really unrealistic, and I know this is a cartoon, and I know that really weird shit happens, but it just pulled me out just enough that I was like, oh, this is going into Rick and Morty territory more than I...
It has to be it has to be internally consistent, and that internal consistency has been established by like 50 years of Star Trek that you're putting yourself into. So there are some rules that you have to play by, even if you're the entry level backwater lowest of the low ships. It still feels like you're still like operating an extremely dangerous piece of machinery with an entire crew. So yeah, I get what you mean there. Let's head over to engineering for some sinning. Two to beam out. Red alarm.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Warning, warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm, red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, you go first.
I mean, Mariner almost killed Boimler this episode. She did not have that phaser on stun. And
that's so funny.
I feel like we're missing out on something like with some phaser protocol.
Yes.
I think like when they're put away at the end of the day, there's someone failed the system check.
Yeah, it should be on stun. It's like, yeah, no, don't worry. It was totally on. Oh, yeah, it was totally on stun.
Yeah, it was totally on like, stun.
I wanted to sing that as well, but it's also the joke because it's like, you should not be shooting the fake. That force field will work whether there's somebody on the other side of it or not. Like, Boimler isn't needed in that test because all that's going to happen is if the force field doesn't work, you'll shoot the wall behind it. Like, I don't know why Boimler is needed in this experiment other than because it's funny.
Yeah, that whole scene was just like, oh, this is silliness and we're going with it. And it led to margaritas, so that's fine.
It sure did, and in that sense, it has to be not a sin. The admiral that's telling Freeman and the Cerritos that they won't be going to Cardassia Prime for the peace conference because it got moved to Vulcan gives the reasoning as the Cardassians are creeping everyone out, which is just a little bit racist. Like, this happens quite a bit in Lower Decks, where I'm just like, that is an incredibly racist or speciesist thing to casually say on an open channel that has been recorded. Like, the Cardassians are just giving everyone the creeps. Okay, we get it. They're lizard people.
I'm going to steal one from Sci-Fi who says, if they're changing the locations anyway, why not divert the Cerritos to the new location? That was actually something I thought of during the show was it did seem like a slight, which is what set the captain off, that they were not being taken very seriously.
Yeah.
She says, and I quote, this ship is a joke, which is pretty rude. But anyway, not the admiral, but the Captain Freeman, she said that. But you do get the impression that they could have maybe sent them, but decided not to because they're not being taken seriously. So maybe Captain Freeman's onto something here. Like, maybe they are just a big joke, but it was strange that they didn't just like divert.
Yeah. Especially if she's done all of the prep work already. Like, who's replacing her on this short notice, or were you never going to let her do it anyway? Like, there's something squiffy going on that we never really get fleshed out. But the episode has to happen. Okay, here's the number one sin of the episode. You ready for it?
Oh, I'm ready.
If buffer time is a thing that is incorporated into work and that all the lower deckers know about it, how do the senior crew not eventually know about it? Because at some point, they were all ensigns and grunt workers as well. And a good chunk of them have worked their way up from being lower deckers into command or into the senior crew. So how does buffer time not eventually filter through to the senior crew just over time?
Yeah.
Eventually it doesn't become a secret because everyone's been promoted and would know that the people replacing them are using buffer time.
Yeah, I had that same
That's what
thought.
I couldn't get my head around. It's like, how does Freeman not know about it?
I was confused. So that kind of confirmed something I was wondering during the show, which was I thought it was maybe something that they just started. Like, but then it seemed like it was something that's passed on from person to person.
It feels like it's passed on. Yeah.
And then
it's tradition.
Yeah. So yeah, eventually that would have gone up.
Yeah. Eventually it's going to trickle through unless it was invented within the last year, which if it's a tradition, that doesn't feel right. Like, both things can't really be true. So yeah, that felt like a weird one. A weird premise that kind of just has to be ignored.
It does, for the sake of the joke.
Exactly. The other one I have is linked to buffer time, and it's It's crazy that buffer time is a secret that has been kept secret really, really well. But within 5 minutes, two people slip up and mention buffer time in front of Freeman. Mm-hmm. There's the guy in 10 forward or whatever, and then Boimler does it in the turbo shaft. So I'm like, how did this get fucked up in minutes after it being a secret for so long?
Because the episode needed it to, Ian.
Oh, that's not fair, Danae. You're using cartoon logic on me.
Here's a sin from Sarah. We never got to name the Marinade and Tenderloin band.
I think you just did. It's Marinade and Tenderloin.
I think that's it. That's the name
of the band.
I think that was it.
Amazing.
I actually have a question that might be a sin. It was more like a... So this episode has the geode leader, the crystal leader guy. He's like, if you want to get off, then we have to go to a combat. And if you win, then everybody gets to go home. And if not, then everyone's crushed by a geode. We end up winning the battle. So our team is being released back to the burrito. And then there's this kind of moment where the leader is talking to the warrior guy. And he says something like, we really need to change this so we can use the geode. But I was confused because he's like, so does that mean they have this big champion that they said never loses? So that means that they would have already used the geode. Anyway, it just kind of like unzipped all of that for me. I couldn't really even... That's another reason why I think the episode slipped for me, is even that seemed to be undone by the end. I don't know.
Yeah, some of the jokes undo themselves for the sake of being jokes. It really sings when you can do both, when you can stay consistent and be funny, because they don't even say that, like, hey, we're fed up of you losing. Like, the whole thing was a charade. Like, he never actually wins. They were just lying to make him look impressive. They don't explicitly say that. So it feels like it's a joke just for the sake of getting to that. We want to use the geode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you mean there.
Yeah, definitely. I was like, well, but if he never loses, then you would have been smashing people by now, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have smashed plenty of people. Like,
the leader's essentially wanting to change something so that he ensures that he gets to smash somebody.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, just smash people.
Yeah.
If you want to smash them, just smash them.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's all of the sins I think we have. We're mixing things up a little bit, and we're actually going to, before we say goodbye, we're going to do a quick email. Computer, two to beam. Where do we do this from now? The cargo bay? Oh, no, the observation lounge. Two to beam to the observation lounge, even though it's just through that door over there. I'll race you there. Emails. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email.
Well, email. Hold on a second.
Let's see. I know what you're going for. The news this week. Wait, no, not the news.
Sorry.
Okay, we have a lovely email from somebody, and it's going to have a suggestion for what we do after Lower Decks that I want you to have your thoughts on, because picking the theme is very much about you as well, Danae, because I want you to access Star Trek in a way that appeals to you as well. So that's why I thought this email is quite relevant. Hello, Jack here. I have been a listener to the podcast for about a year. Hello, Jack. And I'm a huge fan. Aww. I have grown up on Star Trek for as long as I can remember. My dad was the one who always watched them with me from the age of 5. And we still watch and talk about them today. So it will always have a special place in my heart. Love that. Very similar to my story as well. I always joke with friends and co-workers that I know more about Star Trek than anything else in life. Welcome to the club. You ever wish like you knew something like important about an actual subject in the world? No, not me. I'm happy with my Star Trek. For the next series, before Lower Decks' final season, I was wondering if you and the Ambassador would consider diving into some of the darker episodes of Star Trek. Before getting into another comical season of Lower Decks, specifically some episodes such as Chain of Command, which deals with torture, The Drumhead, which deals with lots of shit, actually, in a big court case, and In the Pale Moonlight, which is the most morally ambiguous episode of Star Trek, I think, that's out there. The latter happens to be mine and my dad's favourite episode of all time, and I think it shows a great dimension to Captain Sisko's character and the darker elements of Starfleet. Thank you so much for doing the show. It's great to listen to people who love the series as much as I do. P.S. Also a huge CinemaSins fan. Hey, cool. So what do you think about that, Danae? So obviously you don't know what those episode titles mean, but the idea of deliberately hitting the darkest episodes of Star Trek that are more morally ambiguous, how does that hit you?
So we're going to be watching Janeway kill things then?
That will absolutely be one of the four episodes, without a doubt. Yeah, there was one in... Yeah, there are two where she is extremely morally ambiguous that we would pick from.
So yeah, we have this idea of doing Lower Decks season one and then a few episodes of a palate cleanser before going in.
A palate cleanser will be depressing.
let's just go pendulum swing from goofiness all the way over to like incredibly serious. And then, but you're only dipping into four episodes. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to need to have some therapy those particular weeks. I think anytime you watch a movie and you know it's going to be heavy, it's a little bit daunting to go to it. So there's got to be a bit to be said about purposefully going into darker episodes that feels a little bit daunting, because I would rather it kind of almost be a surprise where it's like, oh, wow, that was really serious. Instead of, in today's episode, we're going to do some, but I think we should do it. I do.
Yeah, I think
it's a good idea.
Knowing that it's only four episodes is good. Sandwiching it between a lot of genuine humor is smart. And I replied to Jack and I said, the episodes that you've mentioned are ones I am dying to show Danae, but it is about picking the right time to do it, because some of the stuff we'll be talking about is quite serious as well. So you don't want to plonk it in the middle of like another theme. It kind of does need to be its own thing. So I kind of like that idea. So I think there's a good chance we're going to do that. So I guess this is a call to arms to everybody. Send us your darkest, most fucked up episodes of Star Trek.
Oh, good.
Ambiguous, dark, just wow. Even if you, at the end of it, you're just like, I'm not sure that was even Star Trek. Send them our way. There's a good amount to choose from.
I also like the idea of getting to see the darker side of Starfleet or the Federation or just the character flaws. I think that really brings an element of reality to a show. So
yeah, agreed.
Specifically the mention of Sisko. I am interested in that one because I would like to see a little bit more dimension in the Deep Space Nine realm.
I just got chills. We will definitely be doing In the Pale Moonlight, because that when people say like dark episodes of Star Trek are morally ambiguous, that is the immediate one that people go to. It is I'm still working out if I'm okay with what happens in the Pale Moonlight. And it's so good. It's so good. I think we'll probably kick off with that one. Yeah. Love that. So thank you for that email, Jack. That I think you may have just influenced where the show might be going. Yeah, send your emails, whether they be about Star Trek or anything, to be honest, to captainspod@cinemasins.com. Okay, Ambassador, next week we have got Lower Decks Season 1, Episode 4, which is called Moist Vessel. So we will see you next week for Moist Vessel. Until then, you can join our lovely Captain's Pod channel on the CinemaSins Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins. Send us your emails, captainspod@cinemasins.com, and join us for our ridiculous live show, which has had me head banging, hair flopping, cat telling stories. There's some madness that you only get to see during the live recording of the show, which is at 12:30 CST on youtube.com/CSPN, I believe, on the CSPN, the CinemaSins Podcast Network YouTube channel, and twitch.tv/CinemaSinsLive. And until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and just roll your sleeves down. This isn't a balm from me.
And it's congratulations. You look like a fucking scratch post from me.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Before we get started, thank you so much for your positive feedback about our Lord of the Rings crossover episode.
Yeah.
Now that it's been a couple of weeks since it came out, we've had more time to kind of get feedback on all of the different platforms, and it's been really nice. So thank you so much for enjoying the show and hosting about it.
Yeah, we'd love to do it again.
Yeah.
And let us know if there's any other podcasts that you guys listen to that you think would be a fun crossover as well, that's kind of relevant or irrelevant. I don't really care. We'd love to talk to your favorite podcasting people. Right. Where are my notes? Oh, wait. I've got to time it right. Hang on. Wait. Start it again. I'm not ready yet.
Oh, okay. Oh wow. You're really going to do it?
Yeah, I'm gonna try and line it up with the music.
It freaked me out because the audio has been dock it in
the
audio.
Yeah, that's my cue to talk.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, where did it go?
Where did
so
it go?
I should probably have like the actual one and I can use it as a bed.
Captain's monster. I missed it by that much. It's okay. Captain Spot, Stardate 1681-64.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise. And wait, no, we've done the intro already. We're in 10 forward.
I know. I was what waiting am I for doing? You to figure, I don't know.
What am
we
I doing?
Can't
do
it. We've already done the intro.
Yeah, we've done this bit. I need 10 forward. Welcome to 10 forward, the part of the show where we... It's on a loop. I thought you were fucking with me, but I left it on a loop.
I don't even have it open. But you don't know that. You're right. I could have been fucking with you.
Right? Everyone thinks it's you. Oh,
it's fine. It's amazing. Fine. It's Danae Chaos Energy. I totally get it. Oh, red alarm.
Red alarm.
Why
red
is it alarm?
Because the Pakleds, they're the really simple bad guys that we've seen that are a bit stupid in Lower Decks and they steal other people's technology.
Okay. Their
red alert when they're in trouble is just a Pakled saying, red alarm, red alarm.
That's amazing. So I forgot that.
Funny. Great.
Because you can like load stuff onto this board and I haven't done anything with it yet. So I was just playing around with it. I added this one.
This just in from the Federation News Network. Triples, still scary.
Wait.
No, this is like a super Sonic the Hedgehog level.
It's like the most energetic news.
Each headline would have to go like, bam! Bam! Sheep, still fluffy. That's the news.
This just in. I've decided to completely fire Captain. Oh, God. All right, those of you who are listening at home, just know that whenever I play that, Ian starts headbanging, and it's for his own safety that I'm going
to
stop that.
You have to cut it off.
I really need to.
What am I doing? Right. Anyway.
It's like burned into my mind. You get this like really intense look on your face, and then all of a sudden your hair is just like an entire other being. It's crazy shit. I can't wait for you to go back and watch it. It's so stupid. I love it.
Oh my God. How are you this week, Ambassador?
It's been a very crazy work week. I've written on something for CinemaSins that is probably... I've written on a few of like the big ones, like Dune, for example. I wrote on Dune. And that was... I was terrified going into that one because there's such a massive fan base.
It's dense. Yeah.
It feels really, really dense. It was like that. I've also written on Avatar, another big one. This is another one that has a big fan base and it's a big movie and it's long. And I'm like, man, when these things come down the pipeline, you're just like, okay. But I did it and I feel like I feel really, really good, but I'm in the post writing, like, I think I just need to lay down.
Yeah. It sounds so weird. It is the most mentally draining thing I've ever done. When you finish the gauntlet of like a 2.5 hour, 3 hour movie, I think about Cloud Atlas, which was, I think, 3 hours long. And afterwards, you're kind of spent for a few days because you're like, what did I just do? I stay on American time a lot, which makes sense for work. And one of the advantages is that I get to see some crazy shit happen at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
I get to spy on the world while everyone else is asleep. So it was...
And by the world, do you mean just like your...
Way.
Your street.
Just while they're sleeping, yeah. I hear some, like... it's electrical. And I'm like, that's got to be an electric car. Okay. So I go to the window. It's like 3:30 in the morning. And an electric car walks down my street. It's a little cul-de-sac.
Walks down your street?
Walk? That was weird. Drives down my street.
You do
my
see
street.
The craziest shit.
It had legs. It had a little transformer robot legs. And it went, kind of turned to look at me and just went, shh, go to sleep. Shh. Anyway, the car drives down my street, parks up, and I don't think much more of it. So I go back into my office, and then I hear like a lot of clicking and like rustling. So I go back to the window, and I see a man in a high-vis jacket with a torch on his chest, and he's walking around taking pictures of this car that is illegally parked. So I have like a peek out of my window, and there's one car that's parked on double yellow lines, which you're not allowed to do. And then next to it, there is another car parked on the bend, also illegally parked. So I watch him take pictures all the way around this car, take pictures inside the car, get the reg, lots of different angles, goes all the way down the street, takes a picture. I'm like, okay, fine. Ha ha, sucks to be you. You're getting a ticket. I go back to my office, and I can still hear this rustling like 10 minutes later. And he's waited there for 10 minutes to like give them some good grace or something. And so I guess it's to prove how long it was parked there. So it wasn't just like 30 seconds. Sorry, buddy, I'm out of here. He has timestamps which prove how long that car has been there. 20 minutes later, I hear somebody on their phone. Of course, I poke my head out the window, and it's the owner of one of the cars. And he gets into the car, ignoring the penalty notice, which is on the windscreen. So they put this little plastic bag on the car, and then that has your penalty inside of it. And it has like instructions. It says, here's your registration. This is how much you have to pay. This is when you have to pay it by. He doesn't see it. He's talking on the phone, and then he gets back out, spots it, picks it off, peels it off of the car, and then sticks it to another car in the street. And I'm like, that's not going to work. He has...
because he has no idea how much they identified that car.
No idea at all. He just thinks it's a quick, penalty, slap, walk away. He has no idea the hundreds of pictures that have been taken across 15 minutes. And also, like, that in that notice has the registration number.
Their registration.
In there. Like, it's crazy. 5 minutes later, what I assume is his buddy comes out to get into the other illegally parked car. Now, this guy pulls up the bonnet or the hood of his car, props it up, takes pictures of it with the hood up, pictures of the little notice on his car, in what I can only assume is an attempt to say, I'm broken down.
Oh my God.
Like, you put a penalty on my car while I was broken down, and here's the pictures to prove it. Again, not realizing how much photo evidence they have of how long the car was there, but like, good on him. Like, he thinks just like, oh, this car, the bit that I can access is open, therefore it must be broken down. So he does that, drops the hood, and then drives away as well. And I will sadly never know if they got out of their fines, but I'm willing to bet they did not.
Because they're not a neighbor, like, that you see regularly. This is just, like, somebody that was...
Yeah, I did not recognize these cars, but they picked the wrong... Like, that's some bad timing. But it was just... I had, like, had my popcorn, and I was like, the stuff that I... an entire story happened that I would have missed had I been asleep. It's just... it's a really interesting time of day.
Last night, there was a massive thunderstorm. 60 mile per hour winds.
Yikes.
Part of my tree blew out. It was crazy. And all of my animals hate storms. So I wasn't surprised the cat wanted to stay. But he started to do this thing where he'll wake me up to go outside. And then he really is just fucking with me.
Would you let this happen if, in theory, I wanted to go outside? Would you let me? Is what he's thinking.
I guess. I think he's testing me. Because,
yeah.
So I lay down in bed. I look at memes like everyone does. And then go to sleep, which is terrible for your sleep rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
We should all stop having smartphones just all together at this point.
Just stop having them in the bedroom, for sure.
Rotting our lives away.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm sometime in that range of like an hour before I finally am ready to go to sleep, the cat will meow. And every time, I'm realizing there's a pattern here. I should pay more attention. I get up thinking he wants to be let out, but instead he flops in front of the door and I just lose all memory of why I came out there and he just sucks me in.
Like, yes. You get the belly rubs.
So yeah, I pet the cat for a while. And then sometimes he'll like go meh, 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 and he'll lead me. And so I'll follow him around. And then I end up giving him a treat because I'm like, you're so cute. So he's luring me now. I'm realizing the pattern. He's luring me back into the treat. And last night, like, you know, you want to go out? No, he didn't leave. Again, this time he wakes me up. You want to go out? And he doesn't leave. I'll open the door and he just looks out. And then he flops. Four times he did this. Yeah. Like,
it might be time that he doesn't sleep in the bedroom.
He's not sleeping in the bedroom. He's just out in the house.
Oh, you may have to kick him out.
And then he disappears. I don't want to. It feels wrong.
Yeah, it really does.
It feels really wrong to just like kick an animal and be like, hey, get out.
Go live in that store.
When he's choosing to look outside and go, no, I still want to hang out with you a little bit longer. That feels nice.
Yeah.
And then last night, he came and jumped into the bed with me and the two dogs. That was an adventure. And I got to experience a thing where he didn't know where he was jumping and he landed right on my face.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then he stood there and I was like holding my breath because he has claws.
Yes.
So he's literally just jumped from the floor onto my head.
Yeah.
And then realizes that he is on my head, but also surrounded by dog because the dogs sleep by me.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, shit. And then he's like frozen and I'm frozen because I'm afraid if I move, he's going to claw my eye. You know?
Yes, he probably would.
I've been trying to figure out a few new menu items. And then I don't know why this happened exactly, but then you know how Google will send you.
Of course. Yeah.
Anyone will send you, not just Google. Alexa. Everyone who has permission to look at whatever you're browsing on your phone. So suddenly I'm getting, let me get this right. 80s casserole recipes you're so excited have made a comeback, I think was the first one. And then the second one was
interesting.
Five must try casseroles that you can't believe are still good. So it's like clickbait for recipes, which is great because I'm looking for recipes. But when I'm like browsing through, oh my God, I haven't had that dish since the 80s. I was like, it's true.
Clickbait that actually works. Well, what's interesting is that I have a cooking story as well. This morning, I made a batch of breakfast burritos. I made six breakfast burritos with scrambled egg, bacon, homemade hash browns, ketchup and mustard, and then wrapped them all up. And I can tell you, it was not fucking worth it. It took me an hour and a half to cook everything, assemble it all, make it into burritos. And I guess it might be worth it over the weekend as I'm eating the burritos that I didn't have to prepare because they're already in the fridge. But my instinct is it was not worth it. They were yummy, but that was a lot of cooking. Sarah says, I had fish and chips for the first time ever. Thoughts on fish and chips? How long have you been in England if that's the first time?
Yeah.
It's delicious. It's one of my favorite meals.
I mean, it's fried fish.
My thoughts are, yeah, you should have it every day. Those are my thoughts. And we nearly did when you came to visit. We had so much fish.
I think what I found to be, it's how it's fried. It's if the oil is nice and clean.
Correct. That's a big deal.
And it's the breading that goes around the fish. And it's like a light batter. Breading.
The batter.
Not
it's breading.
So yummy.
It's a batter.
That's true.
It's so good. You just eat the batter.
When we got back to the U.S., there was this sort of like letdown of, well, I guess we can't call them chips anymore because we're back to French fries.
I did have to specify that. A few reminders that what you're going to be getting isn't potato chips. You're getting fries, but they're thicker.
Do I have a bleep? I want to get a bleep.
You should get one. I've got one somewhere.
Surely there's a bleep on here. Oh, yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you fucking do.
Oh, I didn't get yours. I got mine.
Yeah, you fucking do.
Oh, no.